The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Jen Coburn and I'm so pleased you could join us tonight. We're taking it back to the beginning this evening, to the early days of parenting, with those birth and post-birth few months. And I'm delighted to have joined with me in the studio a very special lady who personally was my saviour when I had my son 3 years ago. Holly Clark, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you very much.
So, Holly, I wondered if you could tell the listeners what your job is.
So, I am a birth and postnatal doula. If nobody knows what that is, it means that I am, I guess you'd describe it as a sort of a trained non-medical support person for people who are due to have a baby, who are pregnant, giving birth, or the first few weeks or months of having a baby. So I'm there mainly just to go through your birth options with you, help you make some, we don't like calling them birth plans because I think sometimes that makes everybody think it's very rigid and it can't be changed. So we talk about birth options, where you're going to birth your baby. And really, we're sort of guided by the people that contact us and want to work with us. So yeah, that's kind of my role, I think.
Yeah, I mean, a doula, and it's a funny word, isn't it? You kind of hear it. And I remember when I was pregnant, I'd heard of a doula, and I just didn't quite know what one was or what one did. As kind of, and am I right in kind of thinking there's a bit of a myth around it? It sounds very exclusive. It sounds a bit, you know, airy-fairy. But actually, you were my postnatal birth doula. And like I said, you were like something sent from above in those early days. But I always thought a doula was someone who helped someone in the birth. But can you just explain to me about those two different roles, that there is a birth doula and then a postnatal birth doula? And what's the difference there, Holly?
Yeah, so you can imagine many, many, many years ago, before women really birthed in hospital, they probably birthed in their home or, you know, in their community with the women in their community. So really, we've always been around, but we've now got a name. And actually, doula, I think if you looked up in the dictionary, it says woman slave or something weird.
But oh gosh,
I know. Yeah, I think it's a Greek meaning or something. But the difference between a birth doula and a postnatal doula is, birth doula, I was booked by, you know, a couple, solo parent, I would support that person through the later stages of their pregnancy, usually go to their birth, whatever their birth would be, whether it was in hospital or at home. It could be a cesarean birth as well. You know, that's their choice. And then I would stay throughout the whole birth and then usually support them after the birth for a few weeks and visit them once, help with that initial breastfeeding or feeding or sleeping or sort of preparing to bring baby home. Whereas a postnatal doula, you can book a postnatal doula without them being at your birth. And we would come in once you're home with your baby or once you're ready for us to sort of start the role. And really, it would be anything that the parent would need from us. So I do nights, as you know, Jen, I'd come over in the evenings about 9 p.m. and I'd usually go in the spare room or whatever set up you have in your house, and I'd support you with the night feeds and the night support. Mm-hmm. So if you were breastfeeding, I could have the baby in the room with me and then bring the baby to you when the baby wakes up. Or if you were bottle feeding, I would give the baby the bottle for you and then sort of help you get through the night shift and then finish around 7 a.m. Usually I try and get in the kitchen and have a good tidy up and do all the bottles and make it look all nice, maybe make your coffee or do some breakfast before I go. If it was a day shift, then I would probably pop in whenever it suits you, help you with some light house chores, loading the dishwasher, taking the dog for a walk, I don't know, whatever. Not necessarily holding the baby for you, because I think new parents want to hold their own baby. but I would sort of hold you, I guess. I would hold the mother or, you know, the birthing person and just look out for you. There's a lot of people that might book a doula who don't have family nearby. That's not always the case. Sometimes they know that having someone in the home that's not a family member is actually easier to work alongside with, without judgment, I guess. And because it's a paid role as well, I think you know where your parameters are, you know where your boundaries are, don't you?
Absolutely.
But yeah, really, it's just giving you the support you need to get started on your own journey. You know, we don't want to come in and take over and be these heroes that you can't do without. We like to come in, help you get established, get some decent sleep, help you establish whatever feeding you want to do with your baby, and then give you the empowerment and the confidence that you can do it on your own. That's the best job.
Doesn't it just sound like the best thing on this planet? I mean, it literally was incredible when I met you, Holly. For the listeners who didn't catch my previous interview, I'm actually a solo mum by choice, which means I had my baby with a sperm donor. So it's just me and my boy. I am surrounded by amazing parents and family and support network. But when I was looking at birth and that postnatal birth moment that you're talking about, Holly, it did feel very daunting. There was a lot of preparation for the birth. I was in an antenatal club and, you know, I was obviously having medical kind of appointments, and it all was leading up to this birth. And I was very daunted about the idea of coming home with my baby and then being like, and off you go. Yeah. Good luck. And because I'd never heard of a postnatal doula, when I came across you guys, it just sounded like stabilizers on a bike that I was learning to ride, was what it felt like.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah. And, you know, you definitely weren't just pushing me along. I mean, I was always the mum looking after my baby. But what you actually did, I found, was you looked after me. And that was such a gift, because if you're listening to the Parents Show, the chances are you have had a baby. And those early days, I mean, the hormones, the tears, breastfeeding, I found very difficult at the beginning. And Holly was someone who could reassure me that this was normal, that this was okay. Hey, why don't we try this? And yet, you know, you turned up on day one, Holly, with a bowl of soup. And I thought, we're going to get on just great. So are there lots of different types of families and mums you help? Or, you know, it does sound, like I said, exclusive. And I really want to drum home that it isn't. You know, I am not a Moneybags millionaire here. Mm. You know, I'm a working solo mum. But it is for everybody, isn't it? Is it all from all walks of life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the hardest things to get across to people, that you don't have to be rich and famous living in Hollywood to get a doula. You know, doulas are in every village and town, most probably in the UK now. Yeah, there's probably less in the northern areas in the UK, but, you know, around London especially, it really took off. And, you know, there's quite a few in Hertfordshire. We are lucky there are a lot of doulas now in Hertfordshire and the surrounding areas. But, you know, I think really, the majority of people I've supported don't have big houses, don't have flashy cars. You know, they don't have, you know, their jobs do sound quite amazing actually when I talk to them. But, you know, they're just normal guys. They're normal people. And they've budgeted into their experience having a baby that they want to have that support person with them. And it could be for the birth or the postnatal. And, you know, they've budgeted for, you know, some people have got married, so they, you know, they've spent a huge amount of money on a wedding. They realise that sort of giving birth, having a baby, is pretty important. And why would you go into it without fully looking into your options, your preparing? So these people might sacrifice something to book the doula, or they might just plan that that's their number one thing that they want. And then they might get, you know, the cheaper buggy, or they just, you know, might not spend so much money on, you know, designer baby clothes. I don't know, whatever it is. But these people, they've just got, you know, normal houses, normal jobs, and they've just found out about doulas through friends or antenatal groups, and they've just realized that this is a no-brainer. This just sounds perfect for what they need. So yeah,
that's actually what I did, Holly, when I found out about you guys and was trying to think how maybe I could afford some of this. It's actually what I asked as my gift. You know, people were asking, what can I gift you? And from my parents, I asked if I could just have a couple of nights support within the first 9 weeks, I think it was, that you were with me. And let's be clear, Holly wasn't with me every day, all day, or every night. I think you did about 3 or 4 nights for me. And then you'd come in a couple of times a week at about, for about 3 hours at a time, maybe. And so I budgeted in that way. And I did actually think that it was really money well spent, because it saved my mental health in many ways, that I knew I had a backup and I could always message you and say, I'm not sure about this, or what is this weird contraption that I'm supposed to be doing, or do I really wake him up after 3 hours? What am I doing, Holly?
Exactly. And I like to also say that I don't have all the answers. I'm not perfect at everything, and I don't have all of this information in my brain all the time. But what we do usually is we go and research the information together, obviously through experience and working with other doulas. And, you know, there's a very good doula network around us. We share stories, we share information.
It was exactly that, wasn't it, Holly, that when you've got a newborn, you do not have the headspace, the hands, or the ability to research anything or Google. No. You think pre-baby, you think it's fine.
Yeah.
I'll just Google that. I'll just read an article about how to deal with that. Oh, no, yeah, you know.
Go down a rabbit hole there.
So it was just having somebody who wasn't sleep deprived on the team, as it were. And how did you ever get into this, Holly? I mean, have you done this forever, or what did you do? How did you get into it?
Well, do you know what? I really wish I knew about doulas when I was pregnant. That's the first thing. I've had 3 children, and I didn't know what a doula was until I was probably pregnant with my 3rd baby. Or maybe my second. I was looking for maybe a private midwife because I wanted to have my baby at home. And it was kind of on the radar, but I'd never really looked into it. And I didn't have a doula or a private midwife in my home birth. Luckily, my sister was took that role on for me. I trained as a nurse in my 20s, and I actually was a, you know, mature student. So by the time I'd sort of finished my nursing degree and everything, it was time to have my own children. So the initial plan was to go into midwifery. That was what it was always going to be. And things just, once I'd had children, I realised that I just didn't think I'd be able to work under the umbrella of the NHS, because the hours, the pay, I just didn't think I'd be able to cope with it, with my husband working away a lot. But I was always really passionate about birth and babies, and I found that a lot of friends and family would come to me for information and ask me advice and things, and I said, I don't know, I just had my own. And then somebody on the phone, I was chatting to a friend, and she said, God, you'd be the best doula ever. And I said, well, what's that? And she said, well, you would support women who are having their babies, and, you know, your knowledge and experience, you could just give them the support that they need. So my youngest went into school, you know, she started nursery around age 5. And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to do something with myself. I want to do something for myself for the first time in God knows how many years of bringing up children. So I literally Googled doula training courses, found one, got myself up to South London. I went on this week's training course, and it was life-changing. It really was. It was just unbelievably amazing. And I just learned so much about birth that I wish I knew already. But actually, I probably did know, but didn't realise I knew. And then I thought I'd have to do lots of training and, you know, essays and exams or whatever. But basically, they just send you on your way. You have a mentor, so you're mentored by an experienced doula, and you have to report back. You have to, you know, submit information for them. They speak to the clients that you've booked. So it's very well sort of supported. And one of my closest friend said, right, you could be my doula then. I said, pardon? And she said, I'm having a baby in February. Why don't you be my doula? It was her third baby. She'd had doulas for her first two. She had very straightforward birth, so she was expecting the same again. I kind of did it as a friend, but she did pay me, so it was a professional role. Yeah. Turned up to the birth, and it was amazing. I came home in the middle of the night, sat up in bed, couldn't sleep, so I was on a massive high, birth high, and I set up my website and my Instagram page and got a job, I don't know, 3 weeks later. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was just testing the waters, but it suddenly just snowballed and I kept getting work. Yeah, it was amazing.
I mean, it obviously sounds like you followed what felt right for you.
Yeah.
You know, the nursing, the midwifery. And the nursing background, I mean, it is very reassuring as well. I found that when, you know, I found you, I thought that is a reassuring backbone you have to your doula work. But people don't need that if they were interested in going into being a doula. Do people need that nursing
Absolutely
background?
Absolutely not. No. And some people say, well, I like the fact that you used to be a nurse because it makes me feel reassured that you're helping me and my baby. But I'd like to stress that I don't offer any medical advice or, you know, that is definitely down to the midwife and the doctors, consultants that you're involved with. And I really shouldn't be using my old nursing role as a doula. But I guess I understand hospitals. I've worked alongside medical professionals. That's helped.
That is really helpful. Do you know, when you were guiding me a bit before birth, I'd never really been in a hospital, but, you know, you could kind of say, well, this is what will happen. This is where the rooms are. That's the triage. Yeah. That's the, you know, it's just a bit of support and a kind of brand new world you're suddenly supposed to be an expert in just because you're pregnant.
Yeah, especially if, you know, you're going to a certain hospital. So I work alongside the Lister Hospital as a volunteer. And, you know, I know that hospital and the maternity, you know, the rooms quite well. So it's the little things like that. I know where to park, you know, I can sort of offer, you know, which is the best spaces to go for. And also I really try to work alongside the medical professionals. I don't want to come in and ruffle everyone's feathers and annoy everyone. But also I do want to help these people that are having their baby to not stand up for themselves, but be able to question why things are happening and say, okay, well, what are the other options? Because this can't be the only option I have. So we go through in their antenatal sessions with me lots of options. And we talk about this BRAIN acronym, which is benefits, risks, alternatives. What is your intuition? And then what if we say no? What if we do nothing? And, you know, what would happen? So it's about the parent asking the medical professional, what else can we do here? You know, give me the statistics of something, explain to me in more detail why you suggest this might be happening. Because usually then the medical professional will actually say, oh, right, okay, well, there are other options, but nobody usually asks me that. Or, you know, they get caught away with their job, and they might see many people that day and talk about the same thing. So it's about just saying, hold on a sec, I'm a human being. I would like to be involved in this decision process. So, yeah.
I think that's absolutely right that you weren't coming at it from a medical point of view. And that the birth doula role, that is a fascinating one. And I was tempted to have you as my birth doula, but actually I had my baby during COVID and during lockdown. So I was restricted to one birthing partner. And so I chose my mum to be with me. If I was allowed more, I would have had you definitely in the room with me for that advocating reason. I'm wondering if, obviously I'm a different case being a solo mum, but in couples who are having their baby, does the partner ever find you're treading on toes, or that might be a difficult dance to do, is it?
Yeah.
How do you keep your role and then the partner's role kind of separate, say in birthing or in the postnatal birthing?
Yeah. It can be, I think, maybe, you know, in a couple, if it was a heterosexual couple, the guy might feel a bit sort of like, well, why do you need a doula? I'm going to be there for you. But sometimes your partner does think differently to you. If it is a man, he hasn't experienced, he's not going to experience the same feelings or same physical things as you. And I think it's very important from day one to have the partner involved and understand that his or her role is extremely important. So I spend a lot of time in antenatal and, you know, preparing to do postnatal support, that the partner has a very specific role that I don't have as a doula. And
right.
I hold both of them. So in a birth, I would give him the tools or her the tools to support their partner in the birth. I would go through in antenatal sessions, you know, ways to help ground her. They might go on to do hypnobirthing course together or something like that. So sometimes the partner may look at me in birth and go, oh my God, is this normal? What's this noise? What's happening? And usually I'm just reassuring them, saying, this is totally normal. You know, well, actually, we talk about this before the birth, but this is what you might hear or see. So I'm very much supporting him. He'll be the one that would be holding her hand, you know, telling, you know, kissing her, whatever it is that she needs from him. And I'm just sort of passing him bottles of water or sort of whispering in his ear, you know, do you want this? Do you need this? Whatever. So, and obviously, if I think that they are struggling, then I might sort of, you know, I mean, it's a three-way thing. It's definitely a three-way thing. And in postnatal, we all know that the partner eventually does have to go back to work or go and sort out the other children or go and do the food shopping or whatever it is. They might be exhausted from the birth as well. So they very early on realize that the doula will come in and give them the break they need, make them feel less guilty for going back to work or less guilty for, I don't know, whatever it is they want to do. And because they know that their partner has that doula there for the 3 hours or overnight so that the couple can get their sleep, can get their rest. They might want to do something together and the doula will just sort of hover around helping. So that many doulas I meet go on holiday with their clients.
Oh, wow.
There's loads of stuff. I mean, it's really specific. Every job is different and every job is specific. And I've worked with charities where the women, there's vulnerable women, they might be refugees or, you know, escaping domestic violence out of their own environment. They've been moved into a different town or a different city and they might not speak the language. So, you know, the postnatal doula has loads of different roles and every time I turn up for a job, it's completely different and you just go with it. And I think it's all about making sure that you've got a bond, you're each other's person, you know, you understand that person that you're going to work with. Is that doula going to fit into my lifestyle, my environment, without sort of judgment or, you know, are we going to rub each other off the wrong way or something? So, you know, you might not, the first doula you interview, you might not want to book that doula.
That's really true, actually. You do need to meet a few, have a few conversations. It is very important that you get on. And when we met, I knew you were the girl for me. It wasn't just the soup, Holly. I promise it wasn't just the soup. we had a real laugh as well during all this, because as we always say on this show, that parenting is, it's a wild and strange and very funny world. Ooh. So you've got to laugh through some of these bizarre moments.
And me as a doula, I made loads of mistakes as a mum. My first birth, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't do antenatal preparation. So, you know, it's fascinating birth and having a baby. It's, every baby's different.
And obviously when it sounds like a job that is rewarding. Is that right, Holly? I mean, are there very special moments as well that you take away from being a doula?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I've had some amazing memories. The first client, my friend who paid for me to actually do the job, you know, getting home in the middle of the night, setting up my website. I'd never, ever set up a website before. I didn't know anything about Instagram. I just was so, it was life-changing. I suddenly felt like me again, I wasn't just a mum or a wife. I was, you know, I had something to give to people. I had knowledge and experience and information that people appreciated. So that kept surprising me that these people actually paid me because they thought I was doing something great. So that was always my biggest high. But yeah, we've had tricky situations. I had a lovely lady who was going to have a home birth, and unfortunately there was a few medical problems, and it was the right decision to have her baby in hospital. It definitely was, for lots of reasons. And she was devastated. But we worked so well with her consultant about her options. And her birth was, you know, it wasn't straightforward. And, you know, she went through quite a lot giving birth. But she felt so supported by everybody around her. And first of all, I did feel like she wasn't being listened to in the birthing room. And after a while, she really stuck her foot down and said, I want everybody to leave the room. I thought, what, me as well? And literally, she said, I'm not having this. And then something clicked and her consultant came, sat next to her on the bed and held her hand and talked to her like a human being. And they came up with a fantastic plan for her. And when I look back at that birth, it could have gone so differently. And I felt so proud that the two of us together had worked alongside her consultant and got the birth that she didn't necessarily plan for, but she, you know, got, you know, she got fully supported. So yeah, it comes in all shapes and sizes, the reward.
But these little babies, when you hold these little babies in your arms, I mean, that's got to be a cherry on top of a work cake, doesn't it?
It is. But you know what? I don't often hold the baby. It's really weird.
Oh.
At the birth, I very rarely hold the baby. Even when I'm saying goodbye after, you know, being there for how many hours. If they ask me to hold the baby, I will, but I'll never do that because that's not my place. So yeah, I get to hold the baby more at postnatal, definitely. And that is brilliant. And I love that. And, you know, that is really, really special, isn't it? That's so lovely. But I do make sure my whole role is looking after you, not the baby.
Amazing.
Because then you can look after your own baby. That's how I look at it.
It is fantastic. It is something, like I said, I didn't know anything about 3 years ago, and it really made a difference to me. So, you know, if anyone listening hadn't heard of this and has learned a bit tonight, I think that will be fabulous because it's all about knowing what's out there, isn't it, Holly? And knowing what could be something that's for you. Not going to be for everybody. Nothing is for everybody. But this might be just for some listeners, something that changes an important moment in their life for them.
I think it's also helping people make informed choices as well.
Exactly.
So they feel when they go into their birth or having a baby that they've educated themselves.
If someone wanted to find you, or there are lots of doulas in Hertfordshire, so you're Hertfordshire based and there are other doulas in Hertfordshire, how would they go about it, Holly?
I think probably asking friends, and, you know, if you are in a community, you might have gone to some NCT classes or antenatal classes. They often talk about doulas. Many books now talk about doulas, so that's a really good way. If then you really are sure you want to go ahead with it, you could go on to, there's a Doula UK website, and you can put in your postcode and they'll come up with some matches for you. There's the Doula Directory. There's Find My Doula. There's quite a few out there now.
Wow, it's like finding a plumber.
Yeah, it is. You know, you put your postcode in. There's a load of doulas' faces that will pop up in your area. They'll have their phone number, email address. You can read about their experience, you know, that you might read past clients' comments. Give them a call, reach out to them, ask to meet for a coffee, meet a couple, you know, don't go with the first one. You might go back to the first one that you spoke to, but use your intuition, your gut, and get your partner to meet them too, you know, have an informal chat, whatever it is. And yeah, look around. But they're the three places I would sort of suggest to go and look for, definitely.
How would they get in touch with you, Holly?
So my website is birthingbabies.net. I'm on Instagram as well, Doula Holly, which, you know, I go through stages of putting things on there, and then, you know, Instagram sometimes really winds me up, so I don't post all the time. But yeah, you can reach out. There's lots of doulas in our area. And to be honest with you, if I couldn't support you, I know doulas that I would recommend. there's some lovely doulas out there. There's some Torben's doulas that I rate very highly. Yeah, there's a really lovely bunch. And they often do other roles as well. They might do reflexology or something. So you might meet them through other channels.
Fantastic. Holly, it has just been a delight. I could sit and talk to you all night long, but we're going to have to go. Thank you so much for joining us and telling us all about this. And yeah, I wish you all the very best with your doulaing journey. You're doing very important and special work.
Oh, thanks so much, Jen. And it's just lovely to catch up and talk babies, because generally most doulas love talking about birth and babies. So usually I have to get told to stop talking. But no, honestly, it's been a real pleasure. And I just love talking to people. So if anybody wants to ask any more questions, I'm always happy to chat. So yeah, that's important.
Thanks so much, Holly. Take care. Bye. Take care.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So welcome back to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. It's great to have you with us again. I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and tonight in the studio, I'm delighted to be joined by Lena Gardner, who is legal director and collaborative lawyer at Raiden Solicitors here in St Albans. Lena, thanks a million for joining us on The Parents Show.
Hi, Lydia. Thanks. It's really good to be here.
So I'm really looking forward to talking to you tonight. We're going to speak specifically about high conflict divorces, how to navigate them, the different process options, and really interestingly, dealing with narcissism. But before we get into the high conflict, let's just set the scene a little bit and tell us about the work you do at Raiden's and your role there, please.
Sure. So I'm a legal director at Raiden's in St Albans. I've been with the firm for nearly 10 years, and I deal mainly with divorce and separation and the financial consequences, dividing the assets on divorce, disputes to do with children, as well as other aspects of family law like prenuptial agreements, cohabitation agreements, and cohabitation disagreements.
There's a lot of work in there, a lot to unpack as well. But divorce rates actually dipped in 2022 to the lowest rate since 1971, which is really interesting. And I think all of us listening here tonight know somebody who's been through a divorce, amicable or not. And it's just such an easy topic to delve into, but we've got loads to ask you on it tonight, Lena. So can you tell us what you're seeing on the grounds in terms of divorces? Are they becoming more routine, less tense? What exactly is happening?
So I think divorce rates are still fairly high overall. Nearly one in two marriages ends in divorce, which is obviously a really sad statistic. So on the ground, we are very busy. We do deal with divorce situations, you know, day in, day out. And we do have lots of new clients coming to us who unfortunately are in the middle of marriage breakdown. So it's, yeah, there's a lot. But, you know, we aim to provide a really supportive service to our clients to help them through this really difficult time in their life. In 2022, the law changed and it took away the fault in the divorce system. So we now have a no-fault divorce system, which is really positive. What that means is that you don't have to blame your ex-partner, your ex-husband, your ex-wife for the breakdown of the marriage. It can proceed on a neutral footing with no fault. And that's been a positive change because it means that divorces can get off the ground in a more constructive way than previously, which is great.
Absolutely. And it's great to see things are moving in the right direction to lessen the tension as much as is possible. But I guess divorces do become conflictual and we read about them in the news. Unfortunately, we probably know family friends who've been through it. Are there ways to navigate a high conflict divorce?
Absolutely. So even though the divorce process itself is now no fault, there can still be, unfortunately, a high level of conflict when it comes to issues regarding the arrangements for the children. and also the financial aspects of the divorce and dividing the assets. So those aspects of divorce can still unfortunately be just as high conflict as they were before the law changed in 2022. And that's something that I have a lot of experience of dealing with. There are a number of ways that we can work with our clients who find themselves in a high conflict divorce situation in order to minimise as far as possible the conflict and try and take some of the heat out of the situation. And we can certainly discuss that in further detail.
Great. And yeah, please do, because I think everybody would be really interested to hear what you have to say about that. And in terms of process, are there different options available? How does it work?
Absolutely. So the divorce process itself is quite straightforward because as part of the government's modernisation programme, they've moved divorce onto an online portal. So it's really quite straightforward now. It's done online. You set up an account and yeah, it's all fairly straightforward. In terms of resolving the children and the finances, that's where it can become a little more tricky, and that's where the support of a lawyer is really, really important. And there are a whole spectrum of process options available. And one of the things that we always consider at the very beginning of our client's case is which of these process options is likely to be most suitable for them and is going to work in their case. And this can include things like negotiating through solicitors, mediation, collaborative law, arbitration, and as a last resort, court proceedings. So that's not an exhaustive list, but they are the main process options that we tend to use.
I had no idea there were so many options available. So, clients clearly need help in navigating those options and figuring out what process is best for them.
Absolutely. And it's very, very case specific and very much tailored to the individual circumstances. So, for example, in a high conflict divorce, or if you are dealing with an ex who has narcissistic personality traits, then options such as mediation are much less likely to be appropriate. And we are able to advise our clients at a fairly early stage as to which options we think are likely to be effective and which options protect our client from any abuse.
And so with high conflict divorces, what processes are you more likely to explore?
Generally speaking, in a high conflict situation, it's more likely that you would be looking at court proceedings, potentially arbitration, or maybe something called hybrid mediation, which is where your solicitor would be present with you at mediation in order to provide you with support. So they're the types of options that we would be looking at when dealing with a high conflict divorce.
And is it clear or relatively clear from early on what kind of a divorce? Do you tend to know from early on if it is a high conflict divorce?
I think having been doing the job for over 10 years, I generally have a fairly good instinct and a fairly good feel at the beginning of a case for which options I think are likely to be the most effective for my client. But obviously, I fully involve my client in that decision-making process. Of course, listen to their views, listen to their take on the situation, and make sure that we are choosing the right path. And sometimes things develop as time goes on. And we don't necessarily have to have a fixed strategy at the outset. We can be flexible to make sure that at every stage we're happy with the direction that the case is going.
That sounds really, really pragmatic and helpful for the clients. Now, you mentioned narcissistic disorders. Can we talk a little bit more about that? I mean, I have to say it's a word you hear a lot, don't you? I mean, a lot of people are getting into the understanding narcissism and how it works. And I'm surprised it plays a role in divorce and not surprised at the same time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think it's an area that we're all becoming much more alive to. I think the courts and the judges are becoming much more alive to it. And it's something that we're gaining a better understanding about as time goes by. And it is something that unfortunately we see a lot. The first point to note is the difference between somebody having narcissistic personality traits and somebody having a narcissistic personality disorder. And they are two separate things. a personality disorder is, you know, a clinical diagnosis that's been made by a medical professional. And narcissistic personality disorder is, you know, relatively uncommon. It's not something that we see day in, day out. However, narcissistic personality traits, which are features, the same features as the personality disorder, is something that we see a lot. And they can include somebody who, for example, has a constant need for admiration, is very concerned about what other people think about them, always wants to be seen in a good light. They often lack empathy, and they struggle to see things from somebody else's point of view. They think that they are entitled and special in some way. They can come across as very arrogant, and they can also be very manipulative. So they're the types of personality traits that we can see quite often, and that can create a high conflict situation.
I think it's so important to understand that, and thanks for explaining the traits. I think that really helps. And how does that play into a high conflict divorce? Like, how do you take it into consideration?
So the way it tends to play out in divorce is, first of all, the person with the narcissistic personality traits will have a sense of entitlement. So they will believe that they are entitled for everything to go their way. And they will have a very fixed view on that that's difficult to move from. They will frequently change the goalposts and renege on things that were agreed. They will no longer be agreed. They will often rack up costs just to punish the other person financially. They will not have a rational perspective on the situation, and they will blow things out of proportion. And they are unlikely to negotiate reasonably. So they are the types of ways in which it can play out in a divorce. We also often see aspects of financial abuse. So, for example, they might spend excessive amounts of money while the divorce is ongoing, simply to reduce the assets that are available to be divided. They might claim that they are ill and they can't work in order to try and reduce their earnings. They may try and drive down the value of certain assets. So that's something that we see frequently. They might cut off the other party. So they may empty bank accounts or block access to credit cards. And they're the types of things that we tend to see.
That's so interesting. I mean, I'm sure it's ringing bells for people, for listeners, for parents and carers tuning in now this evening. I think it's so constructive that your family law firm are taking that into consideration and the courts are taking that into consideration. And how does it work in terms of resolving conflict better? Because I'm sure if somebody has narcissistic traits, they're not going to recognise that they have or admit that they have narcissistic traits.
That's absolutely right. And one of the things that I would always say to my client is, don't expect the other person to necessarily change, because it's very, very difficult for somebody with narcissistic personality traits to actually change. So we can't have a false hope that suddenly the situation is going to get easier, because most of the time it's not. But what we can do is put strategies in place to deal with it. So it's always a good idea to take legal advice at a really early stage. We offer a fixed fee meeting at Raidens. So a client can come to us for a one-off meeting, an hour, hour and a half, to talk everything through at an early stage for a fixed cost. And it's always worth taking that advice. It's always good to be organised. So have all your ducks in a row, start getting all your paperwork together, protect yourself financially, make sure that you're protecting the money that you have and the assets that you have. And that's something that we can help with. Work on your emotional resilience. That's really important. So as well as getting legal advice, get the emotional support that you need to help you through the situation. Engage a counsellor, engage a therapist. Again, that's something that we can help with. We've got great links with other local professionals, therapists, counsellors. We can help you and signpost you to those people, because that's really important. And also ensuring that you're gathering together your network of family and friends who are going to support you through the process. So they're the early steps that somebody can take to safeguard their position.
So you're really encouraging your clients to build themselves, strengthen themselves. arm themselves emotionally to be ready for a high conflict divorce?
Absolutely. I think preparation is key. And then we will guide our clients through the process and we will help them navigate it. You know, we are very alive to these issues, as you said, not necessarily all lawyers are. So engaging a specialist family lawyer and a lawyer that has experience dealing with high conflict divorce, that has experience dealing with narcissism, is really important.
It completely makes sense to include it. And when you describe the kind of, I suppose, techniques and somebody with narcissistic traits would employ, they all sound like the kind of flashpoints of divorces and the kind of things that lead to high conflict.
Yeah. And what's a hallmark of narcissism is something called gaslighting or emotional manipulation. So often, if you've got a narcissistic ex, they will make you feel like you're the one in the wrong, and they will turn everything around on you, make you feel guilty, make you feel like you're doing something wrong. And it's really important to be alive to that. And again, that's something that we can help you with in order to make sure that you realise that this is what's happening to you and help you stand your ground, understand that it's not your fault, and navigate you through the process.
That's incredibly helpful. And do courts see this too? So when you shine a light on narcissistic traits, do they get it? Do they understand gaslighting? Are they taking it into consideration?
I think more and more they are, but it still can be quite hit and miss. One of the big problems with the court system is the lack of resources. So judges do not have very much time to read into the case, to really get to understand the details and the nuances of the case. And that can mean that these types of issues can be overlooked or glossed over because there simply isn't enough time and resource to deal with it. Court is normally a last resort, and that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Lena, that's incredibly, incredibly helpful. And I'm sure a lot of listeners will take on board what you've said. Have you got any, to me, that sounds like there's already innovations in smoothening the process, because if your client is equipped emotionally and has developed greater resilience for the process, things are going to work better. Are there specific techniques or other innovations that you can suggest to bear in mind when dealing with somebody with narcissistic traits?
Absolutely. There are some really good innovations available that we would always talk through with our clients at the beginning that can really help to navigate the process and deal with high levels of conflict and narcissism. So, for example, there are a number of co-parenting apps available. These apps are really clever. So the purpose of the co-parenting app will be for all communication between the parents who are in the process of separating to be taken place on the app. So it's a messaging system. Photographs can be uploaded, videos. There's a diary on there. So it, rather than becoming embroiled in, you know, conflictual conversations or emails or WhatsApps, you can take all of that away by dealing with it in a co-parenting app. Some of the apps are so clever that actually they have a tone measure. So if your message is deemed to be a little bit sharp or rude or angry, it will flag that up with a view to trying to keep the conflict down as far as possible. So I'm really positive about the co-parenting apps. I think they work really well and they can actually be mandated by the courts. The judges are really keen on them as well. So that's one thing. Another thing that we sometimes can recommend is a parenting coordinator. So in a really, really high conflict situation, you can appoint a neutral third party called a parenting coordinator, and they can help on a day-to-day level to assist with disagreements about arrangements for the kids, and communication can go through that neutral person. So again, quite innovative, but can be really effective. Divorce coaches are another source of support that are out there. So slightly different from a therapist or a counsellor. It's a coach who specialises in divorce and separation and who you can turn to for moral support and guidance and emotional support. So, yeah, lots of innovations available.
Yeah, I'd absolutely no idea. They're all brilliant ideas. And I know from friends and family who've gone through divorces, all three innovations that you mentioned there would have saved a huge amount of stress.
Absolutely. And, you know, if we can keep a case out of court, then we will, because, as I said, it tends to be a last resort. It's stressful and it's costly. Of course, in some cases, it's necessary. But in a lot of cases, if we are alive to these issues at an early stage, then actually we can help our clients reach an outcome that doesn't need the intervention of a judge in court.
Excellent, Lena. Thank you so much. And before we let you go, any last top tips for parents listening in tonight who are potentially in a narcissistic or in a relationship with somebody who has narcissistic traits or in looking at a high conflict divorce?
Yeah, I think the first step is recognition. So do your research, speak to your family, speak to your friends, try and get a perspective on your situation and an understanding of the situation that you're in. Be organised and be prepared. Don't expect the other person to change, but get your paperwork together, protect yourself financially as far as you can, and then really importantly, identify a specialist family lawyer that can support you and take early legal advice.
That is incredibly valuable. Lena, thank you so much for joining us on the Parents Show this evening.
You're very welcome. It was great to be here. Thanks, Lydia.
Thank you.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.